Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Tanya Talks, where your voice is heard and your story is told on October 16th, Wednesday evening for a change, 2019, and being broadcast by Faithful, Stephen Burke, 89.9, KLRB-FM, Christian Radio, out of Oklahoma. So this is a very widespread broadcast, podcast, as it usually is, but with given the gravity of what is going on in Southeast Oklahoma there, in Hughes County specifically, what a listenership, what an audience that we have, and I want you guys to know, I want you to remember, this isn't about entertainment. This is, and you all know that's listening right now. This is about problems and people coming together where community is unity and unity is community and making things that are wrong right. And, of course, we all know this show is about public corruption. Thank you very much, Marty Oakley, the esteemed, well-known whistleblower in guardianship abuse for bringing this show to your network, TS Radio Network, who speaks annually at the Whistleblower Summit, standing room only, open invitation, and broke ground with live broadcasts, podcasts, as well as writing many, many articles published by, I think, New York Times and, several some well-known, widely known publications from many years ago and still continues to be an incredible active warrior whistleblower in this venue and has attracted audiences, well, victims from across the world. She's got, people from Australia that are coming over here that are actually, listening to the podcast, I believe, doing podcasts with her now. So please, please, whatever you do, make sure that you know that this is certainly not the only show on this network, okay? We're a darn good one, but we all know I focus mostly on Oklahoma. These problems are widespread throughout our country, but I specific, for the most part, discuss issues in Oklahoma because we need to start somewhere, don't we, you guys? I really thank you all for being here, such loyal friends, listeners, and fellow warriors, and we're all in this together. We're all in this together. I want to say thank you to my mom in New Hampshire for listening. And Mom, it was great talking with you today. I miss you, and I love you like crazy. And on to business. I'm trying to get. We're going to get to this as quickly as we can because this is going to fly by. Although it is a 2-hour show tonight, it's going to fly by. Before I introduce our guests, I would like to let you know, or the normal disclosures are, I'm not an attorney, okay? I'm an advocate, a whistleblower. I'm obviously a public speaker, and I am here to report the wrongs that need to be made right. Guests are well vetted and have shared details of information with me, regarding the victims that come on, and the regular speaker, James Treat, as he's on tonight, and he has become himself a whistleblower and public speaker as he continues to fight corruption in Calvin, Oklahoma, as well as throughout
Hughes County, and there's things that you're going to hear tonight, a little later on, that he's going to be sharing with you. It's very important for you to stay tuned for, but he's going to be with us throughout the show. But I'm not an attorney. Neither Stephen Burke, KLRB, personally or professionally, Marty Oki, TS Radio Network, myself, personally or professionally, and anybody else broadcasting this can be held liable for any errors or mistakes. That being said, I do correct myself if an error is made or information that has been passed is found to be different. Okay, so I am not afraid of redacting and making corrections. So don't you worry about that, and please feel free to notify me, please, for information to follow on these shows and follow-ups. Go to Injustice in Oklahoma Exposed Facebook page, as well as you're going to want to go to Journeys to Justice Facebook page, where people are talking from throughout the country and share stories from throughout the country. And that's a bit of a growing page now with what's being shared there, as well as James Treat has his Facebook page, Calvin Info and Hughes Info, as well as the internet sites. And as far as for Gary Richardson, our very special guest that's coming on tonight, he himself has his own information to share with you. And I will first give you a little bit of a bio on him, and he will be able to share with us some of his great stories, and then we'll get into some of the meat of this. But Gary Richardson is from Oklahoma, or he's a resident of Oklahoma, and he was appointed United States Attorney for the Eastern District of Oklahoma by President Reagan. Okay, and he is with the Republican Party, and prior to that, he was a registered independent. So, as we all know, this is not a party line show, and we don't really talk about Republicans and Democrats and this and that and the other thing. But I say that because it's in his bio, and I want to let you know. And we know that public corruption has no party lines. Okay, so we put everything into that quantifying information that anybody who has been involved in public corruption, you know, there's no rights or wrongs here. We got some bad deals, bad people in any office. I don't care what party line it is. So also, Gary Richardson is an author of several books, including one that especially has drawn my attention to his hard work, called The Black Robe Fever. And you'll want to jot this down. Gary Richardson, peak1.com. I'm going to double check on that, make sure I wrote that correctly, as well as Richardson Law, PPLC.com. He is a legal warrior. He did go on to, after his appointment with President Reagan, you know what? I'm just going to let you, Gary, introduce the rest of this, because I'm sure people would like to hear more from you than from me. So, James Treat, thank you for coming on. And Gary, please, we're just so grateful to have you here with us tonight, and we appreciate your time. We know that you're very busy, but you've also expressed interest and concern in what's going on over in Hughes County with Tomka in particular, to start with.
Well, thank you, and it's good to be on the program. And yes, if you are around me very much, you will often hear me say, I hate corruption with a passion. I've said that for years. And, you know, as U.S. attorney, I was over the Eastern District of Oklahoma, and I prosecuted a lot of the county commissioners for corruption in office. I prosecuted the Speaker of the House for voter fraud and the Majority Floor Leader. And out of all that I prosecuted, I lost one. So we had great success, and And I just, you know, when there's corruption, there's innocent people being harmed. And I like to think of myself as a rescuer, you know, rescuing those that have been harmed, rescuing those that have been wronged. And that's what I do as a lawyer in my practice, and have done for years. I really take on big challenges where someone has been wronged and been harmed. So, yeah, I have an awful lot to say about it as we go on. You know, I ran for
governor. Very refreshing.
And one of the things, one of my platforms was is doing something about corruption in Oklahoma. Particularly, probably the biggest part of corruption in Oklahoma is our turnpikes. You know, I said if I became governor, we would have a forensic audit of the turnpike. Well, you know, they weren't going to let someone like me become governor. It's kind of like when I was nominated BDS attorney, I was told that I would never live to be the U.S. attorney. And I said, what's that about? I said, you know what it's about. No one has any control over you. They're not going to let you be the U.S. attorney. He said, you would prosecute your own mother. And I said, well, I would hope she wouldn't do anything that caused me to have to, you know. But I prosecuted powerful people. And, you know, the first book I wrote, you're talking about books, Fear is Never Your Friend. That's the first book I wrote. So I would always say, you know, they may intimidate me. They may kill me, but they won't ever intimidate me. And that's mm-hmm. kind of how I've lived my life as an adult.
Mm-hmm. And so, and that being said, you know, fear will never stop you. You know, I agree, and as well, there are people out here who, you know, there's plenty of information that's been gathered by people who can speak up and will, and not anonymously, are going to come forward with their name, and then there are plenty that are sharing information that at this time wish to remain anonymous, and that is for fear. And you know, I tend to believe they're you know, people that are genuinely afraid for at times their lives, okay? Because we know what can happen. You know, people go missing and are very suspicious situations right before people are ready to testify or whatnot, as well as you know, they have families, young families, and they don't want to be harassed, or they can't afford to protect themselves, retaliation. So, and I'm not trying to confront you with that by any means, but I also want to, hopefully we can get down to the bottom line with how can people come forward without being afraid, with a strong, united front to make sure that the wrongs are made right. And I know we'll get more in depth
with
that.
Well, you know, The scriptures tell us that we're not to fear man. Also tells us that God is our protector. And I rely on that. I depend on that. And when I was told that they, whoever they were, was not going to allow me to become U.S. attorney, I asked, who are they? And they said, well, it doesn't matter. And I said, well, give them this message. I will go home from work the same way every day. I'll come to work the same way every day. They may kill me, but they won't ever intimidate me. Now, I base my principles largely on the scriptures. And I do believe the scriptures are clear that God is our protector, that we're to fear no man. Just like Black Robe Fever, you know, the theory mm-hmm. of that book is all cowards seek positions of power because the more power they have, the more safe they feel. And when a coward mm-hmm. gets power, they will become a bully.
Oh boy, how many people are nodding their heads right now? Oh boy,
yeah,
yep, that's true.
Amen. I know some people like that.
Amen.
Every time
you
give that, they say, yeah, I know someone like that.
Yeah. and I think that most people do agree that these are the issues. These are people that have the biggest problems with their own self
you know, self-worth, self-values, that they have to create a facade of who they really are just to survive themselves. You know,
now, someone that's very comfortable with themselves does not have to bully someone.
Right. Exactly. So then, okay. Now, I would love it if, you know, before we get into some specific information and details about the things that are going on in Hughes County and with Tumka and Calvin and whatnot, I would like if you wouldn't mind to share with the listeners, our listeners, share with us the story that you, one of the stories that you shared with me during one of our talks about when you were defending a man in federal court, I believe it was, if I'm recounting this, and then the judge threatened contempt on you. So you have survived plenty of contempt threats. And if you want to talk to our listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was representing Vic Pizzell. Vic was the district attorney in McClendon County down in Waco, Texas. And Vic, I'm sure some of you have heard the name Henry Lee Lucas, the alleged mass murderer of all time. Henry had been indicted and charged with murder. He was a drifter of the lady that drifted with him. And when he went for the arraignment, he said, "That's nothing. I've killed over 600 people." So that raised a lot of antennas. And, of course, he just, you know, Henry is pretty smart and dumb at the same time. But anyway, there's a sheriff in South Texas down in Georgetown that went to the jail where Henry was jailed in North Texas and asked him about a case in his county that he could not solve, that had gone unsolved for a few years, and asked him if maybe he did it. And he said, "Yeah, I did." So he got Henry transferred to his jail, and he was a sheriff in Georgetown. And so anyway, Henry and Vic didn't know anything about this, the DA in Waco, but Henry started confessing the murder cases all over the country. For example, if a detective from Tulsa called the sheriff in Georgetown and said, "You know, we have a case in Tulsa, a murder case we can't solve." And of course, a lot of pressure's put on the detective by the relatives and friends. "And would you ask Henry maybe if he was in Tulsa on about a certain date and maybe he could have committed this murder case?" And the sheriff would say, "Well, send your file down and I will review it. My staff will review it. And then we will interview Henry." So what was learned much later by Vic, who didn't know any of this at the time, they would send the file down. They would put the file in the room, put Henry in the room with the file, and Henry would study the file, then they'd call the detective and say, "Yeah, he said he did it. Come on down and interview him." So
are we taking you home?
Vic was in the... I'm sorry?
Actually, you should probably...
Okay, but there's somebody else on the line. We need to make sure, if you're in queue, if anybody else is in queue, you need to make sure that there's no background noise, because we need to hear people speaking.
Got it.
We ready?
Hello? Okay. Go right
Hello?
Ahead. I think we're all set. Hi.
Okay. So Henry, Vic Pizzell had a murder case in his county, and he and his detective had decided who did it, and they were fixing the issue warrants for the guy's arrest. When he gets a call from the detective there at the police station in Waco, telling him that Henry Lucas had confessed to the murder case. Well, Vic knew that Henry Lucas, he didn't know who Henry was at the time, but he knew Henry Lucas didn't have anything to do with this murder case. So he found out about Henry being in Georgetown, so he bench warranted Henry to Waco, which, you know, you don't do that to other law enforcement officers, right? But Vic did. He got close enough to Henry, and Henry told him what was going on. So Vic decided to call a grand jury and indict 8 law enforcement officers in Texas: the head of the Texas Rangers, the sheriff, 2 deputy Texas Rangers, 2 deputy sheriffs. And they found out about it. So they hired a VLO reporter, Charles Duncan, out of Dallas, to come down and do some investigation. He was an investigative reporter, and long story short, he ended up planning stuff around the county and then feeding it back to the media that Vic was crooked and was on the take by lawyers, paying kickbacks and all that. And
yeah, creating the narrative.
Yeah, exactly, creating the narrative, hoping that Vic would get beat at the polls, because, I mean, at the election day, which was coming up. Well, Vic won. So that raised the ante. So they go down to San Antonio and get the U.S. attorney. You know, they give the U.S. attorney all this information that they claim showed that Vic was a criminal. And Vic was indicted, and he was looking at 84 years. So he hired me to represent him. And the week in our defense was that they were retaliating against Vic, and that's why they had him indicted. And I told Vic, I said, Vic, this will be the most difficult way to win your case, but it is the only way we can win it, is prove to a jury that they put together a fraudulent indictment against you. You're looking at 84 years. So the week before trial, federal judge in Austin called the lawyers and Mr. Brazell into his chambers, and he looked at me and said, Mr. Richardson, this jurisdiction does not recognize retaliation as a criminal defense. I don't hear the name Henry Lucas one time during this trial. Do you understand me? Yes, sir. I understand you. So we leave the courthouse. Of course, Vic's beside himself. What are we going to do? I said, what do you mean, what are we going to do? He said, he just took our defense away from us. How do you do that, Vic? He said, we can't talk about Lucas. I said, Vic, he may be a federal judge, and he may wear a black robe, but he does not have the authority to tell me how to defend a criminal case. So what are you saying? What do you think I'm saying? You're going to talk about Lucas? You damn right I'm going to talk about Lucas. So in the opening statement, I started talking about Lucas. Of course, the judge called me up to the bench, and I could tell that he thought that I had either forgotten what he told me or that I didn't understand. So he wasn't too tough on me the first time. Well, when the trial started, I started talking about Lucas, first witness. Long story short, this judge held me in contempt of court 8 times in the first week, and it was a 6-week trial, and told me very clearly that I was going to jail for 6 months when the trial was over. And I said, Judge, I think you know I'm willing to pay whatever price I have to pay to see to it that my client gets the defense he's entitled to in his courtroom. So on Friday, he's going to put me in his hotel over the weekends. And I said, Judge, you know as well as I do, if you do that and Mr. Brazell is convicted, it'll be reversed because I won't be in the right frame of mind on Monday mornings. We won't get to work together over the weekend. So, Judge, why don't you just call a mistrial and go ahead and put me in jail for 6 months, or Judge, leave me alone. You're wasting a lot of good time. He sat there and he said, I'll see you men Monday morning. And I named these judges in my book, Black Robe Fever, and tell the stories, you know. And so he never said another word for me over the next 5 weeks. Vic Frizzell walked out of that federal courthouse a free man.
Goosebumps.
And I've been held in contempt of court by a number of judges, but I've never been punished because I knew what my boundaries were. And I always operated within the boundaries. And I never let them get under my skin. I have a saying, don't ever let them see you sweat. So, anyway.
Right. So now, can we carry this black robe fever into other people that aren't necessarily that's a great story. I mean, that's a great story. And, you know, I only recently learned about, you know, that book, and I can't wait to get it myself because it's empowering. It is absolutely empowering. To hear stories like that. And when you just, you know, when you're feeling a little weak or you're feeling a little on your knees, you got to get back up and you've got to keep going, but know your boundaries as you say. And you know, of course the legal system can sound like a completely different language or no language at all to many. And so breaking it down into smaller bits and pieces is really important. And of course, you know, you know, I'm not fond of, you know, bar card attorneys in general because of what the association stands for. However, when you have people like you out there, and I'm aware that the media tried to smear you too. I did, you know, I've done my research, and I'm aware that they pulled shenanigans on you too. You know, so none of us is.
Matter of fact, I have a lawsuit filed right now against the media for that very thing.
Yeah. Yep. And I hope you win, because you know whatever happened to, you know, real news, things, you know, it's so blatantly dishonest now, where they have their audience looking at opinion as facts, and that is a sham. That is an absolute sham.
You know,
so
Tanya,
but now
kind of wrapping up that story on Vic Fizell, after we got him acquitted of federal charges, we sued the news station in Waco for all those episodes they put on TV calling him a crook and all that, and there was no basis for it. And we got the largest verdict for defamation in the history of our country, of our nation. It's in the Guinness Book of Records. We got a $58 million verdict.
Whoa. Well, I... Here, and that should set that precedent. Who would want that to happen again? That's just so grateful to have you with us. So you know, we're dealing now that I'm going to bring to your attention as I have already, but to any listeners who actually are hearing this for the first time, you know, that haven't been following the series, that, you know, we're dealing now with the County of Hughes. We have had James Treat on as a regular guest since he has been retaliated against and beforehand in Calvin, Oklahoma, for exposing public corruption and could have died and has handwritten death threats waiting for him when he comes home. And he's going about it, you know, never letting them see, people see that he's sweating, because he knows that he's in the right. And as a matter of fact, he'll share later on with us tonight, how he beat, how he did what reminds me of what you've just shared with us, by basically putting the judge in a corner. It's like, well, what are you going to do about it? There's no way that you can do anything other than dismiss this case. So what's happening in Wetumpka is in Hughes County, and you know, they have a new mayor. And that mayor sure seemed like he was going to just be refreshing new blood in the city and take care of some things that were stalled, that should have been taken care of potentially. And so it was just time for new blood. Okay. From what I hear, he had only been in the city for not all that long with his family, and he was voted into being a mayor. Many people were very concerned. There is a pending investigation, as far as everything that I can believe have done to confirm that there is, allegedly a pending investigation at OSBI for voter fraud, as well as horrific charges that were leveled against him and his wife, Rebecca Jackson. So we're talking about James and Rebecca Jackson in Illinois, just horrific sexual crimes with younger girls against him, or young women that were underage at the time against him, that allegedly had been brought to the FBI after hearing from one of the victims, and as well as the school, given the nature of Mr. Jackson's behavior, domineering behavior over his daughter. And he claims that all that is bogus, none of it's true, and that he was never found guilty of anything, or I don't know, he might even claim that he was never charged with anything, but I've actually seen the police paperwork myself. So I do believe that you are innocent until you're proven guilty. I do believe in that whole theory. Unfortunately, that's the way it works. And even though we know a lot of people get away with a lot of things that are crimes and never even charged, okay, that are guilty. But how our system works, it is what it is. So now this mayor has come in and he has taken on the role and has been happy to say so, that he basically wants to run the city like a military. I adamantly believe that he has brought a great deal of nepotism into his role with his hiring and where he has placed people, whether they are volunteer or paid on the side or not, whatever it is, that there is all kinds of horrific controls now, and he's hired people basically that will kowtow to him or is doing his best to do that, because he hires and fires, hires and fires, hires and fires. There is, and this is new news now to Wetumpkins, there has been submitted an open records request to the city clerk asking for documents. Okay, hopefully everybody's really happy hearing this, that there's an open records request that has been formally submitted to the clerk that is asking for information in regards to from 2016 and up until October 11th, 2019, for records of any past and present city employees, public trust employees, boards, commissions, committees, and elected officials, as well as, listen to this, you guys, monthly itemized bank statements. This is all breaking news right now. Generated from July 1st, 2016 to October 11, 2019, including all public trusts, including the cemetery. Issues with the cemetery right now. Allegedly, he's not allowing somebody to be buried there, although the plot is bought and paid for. All itemized credit card statements as well within the same time frame, including the cemetery, petty cash documents, et cetera, email traffic sent and received, city manager, April 1st October 11, 2019, all email traffic generated and received by James Jackson, again, that time frame, again, by Rebecca Jackson, that's included, again, by Randy Hickley, who is a council member, I believe. Received by Norma Marshall, another council member, also by June Fixico, another council member, and also Autumn Jackson or other alias, which, Autumn Jackson legally changed her name and basically calls Rebecca and James either mom and dad or Rebecca and James, contracts, invoices, all job postings, correspondence, and this goes on and on and on. So I won't take any more time, but I just want the Wetumpkins to know that this has gone forward. It has now been submitted. So, you guys start getting your affidavits done. So what do you say about a city like this? It's actually a weak mayor city, but is being hijacked by a mayor that is overrunning the city, and that the city manager is actually a known drunkard, and even just yesterday was alleged to be very drunk.
Are you asking me?
Yes, I am. And then I've got a caller on the line that has a few very pointed questions and prepared questions.
Well, Tanya, the saying is, when good people do nothing, evil prevails. And good people often become intimidated, out of fear. And that's one of the reasons. I had a lot of fear as a kid, and I hated it. So as I became an adult, I decided to deal with it. So I went to the scriptures and formulated one of my principles. Fear is never your friend. Fear no man. And I've lived my life that way. Now, when I was writing the book, I was telling my banker I was writing the book. She said, "What's the title?" I said, "Fear's Never Your Friend." She looked at me strangely, and I said, "You don't agree with that, do you?" She said, "Not really." And I said, "Tell me why." She said, "Well," she said, "you know, if I saw a snake curled up on the floor in a position to strike, and I knew it was a dangerous snake, a poisonous snake, and I was within its area, I think my fear would help me maybe protect myself." And I said, "Well, what do you think a two-year-old baby crawling on the floor would do if they saw the same snake?" "So well, probably go to the snake." I said, "Exactly. What do you have that the snake, that the two-year-old doesn't have? You have knowledge and you have wisdom. Knowledge and wisdom is your friend, not fear."
Wow.
Knowledge and wisdom is your friend. I don't ever say, you know, if I'm working with another learner, he said, "I'm afraid that." I said, "You can stop right there. I'm not interested in any conclusion that comes out of fear."
Right.
Because fear is never your friend.
Oh.
Yeah. And there are small towns, but you know, one of the things I learned as U.S. attorney, of course, Eastern Oklahoma has long had the reputation of being probably the most corrupt part of Oklahoma. I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying it's had that reputation. And everybody seemed to think that their county was the worst, but it goes on, you know, and sometimes that is the case. But, you know, it's pretty widespread because good people do nothing to take it on, challenge it.
And what I'm finding now, okay, in Wetumpka is I think there are a lot of good people that don't know where to start or how to start. So there's a lot of information. And, you know, and this is what is a wonderful, unique situation is that we've got some strong-minded people here that are just trying to figure out, what they need to do. And then, you know, when I was on the phone with the assistant district attorney the other day, she hung up on me. And I brought up the concern that, you know, goodness, you know, we have a mayor who just was nominated by his wife on the council to nominate himself, his wife, and somebody else to become reserve officers. Well, and this is where I would like to bring on our caller right now. Marty, do you have her on for me? Because she has some pointed questions about that. And I'm not sure if she wants to give her name, so I'm going to leave it up to her.
I'm on whenever you get me on there.
Wonderful. So would you like to give your name? That's up to you. Or you can remain anonymous. I know who you are, so I'm comfortable with you speaking, but that's up to you whether you want to name yourself.
Well, I'm Kayla. And I do have some concerns, but first I want to go back a little bit and maybe make a correction in something that you said.
Please do.
I don't believe that any charges were pressed or filed against the Jacksons in Illinois. I think it's still all investigations that are going on. And the FBI does have the file, but I don't believe that any actual charges have been filed.
Okay.
That's my
understanding. A report was made
and then referred
sure
to
was,
the FBI.
Sure was, huh?
It is an open investigation.
Thank you very much for that.
Oh, you're
welcome.
Okay,
thank you very much for that. Okay.
So I have lots of concerns regarding this mayor and his family. But what I want to address tonight is at the last council meeting, and you mentioned it briefly, you know, about nominating themselves and voting on becoming reserve officers. But they went into an executive session in the middle of the regular
open meeting.
Hold on. Okay. I'm on the phone, Ron. Okay, so anyway, I'm like yelling because the computer is just, and I'm like, there's nothing on the computer here. It's just noise. Anyway,
appreciate you being here with us, Kayla. I really do. I know your life is busy.
No, no problem. But they went into an executive session, and according to the agenda, and I'm going to read from the agenda, to assess possible vulnerabilities to acts of terrorism in accordance with 25 OS Section 307B11B. And when they came out of this executive session into a regular session again, Rebecca Jackson, who is the wife of the mayor and also sits on the council, made a motion, and then they all voted, and it was unanimous, making Mayor James Jackson and his wife Rebecca, who's also a councilwoman, and then one other person, who I won't name since they are not sitting on the council, to be reserve police officers. So my first concern is, I thought that hiring officers in a weak mayor form of government rested with the chief of police, not the city council. So I'm not sure how they even made that motion or voted on it, unless there's something that I don't know about that in that. And I've read that statute, and I can't see anything that tells me that what they did was legal. So that's my first concern.
And my only thought to that is they don't have anybody who's CLEAT certified there right now, do they, to actually be the chief of police, or did they fix that?
No, they hired a chief of police who I believe he graduated from CLEAT in August. And then they have another one who is going through CLEAT right now, who was named as the chief of police, but then he stepped aside, according to them, or demoted.
Just very recently, yeah.
In favor of this other gentleman who they hired, who is CLEAT certified. So, and he was sitting in on the meeting, and you could kind of tell by the look on his face, he did not know that this was going to happen. And so, my question there is that even legal, or should the chief of police have been the one to do that? Now, secondly, can council members even hold positions in the city where they sit on the council, even if it's a voluntary, not getting paid, driving their own vehicle, but they're considered police officers? If they didn't hold that job when they were elected to the council. And then the Jackson said that they told, or they didn't say, they told Fox 25 News that they encourage every citizen to apply to become a reserve officer. And that,
well, I think
Jackson,
that was to cover their butts, quite frankly. Don't you think so?
I think we all should. I think all, 1,500 people that live in, the town should go down and apply. But
yeah, after all, we didn't vet ourselves. Why should we vet you?
I know.
Mr. Richardson, what do you have to say about this?
They're going to do the background check. They're going to do the psychological testing. They're going to do the CLEAT training. Who's going to pay for all this?
Mm-hmm.
I've got lots of concerns. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I would say that you need to look at the city rules and regulations, and see how they're set up and see whether or not they're complying with them.
Okay, so if that is not done at a state level? Because we're not a charter city.
Well, you're not a charter city?
No. No, mayor manager form of government, and we are not a charter.
Right.
So we can't make up our own rules, can we?
you can look at the charter.
We don't
it's
have
not
a charter.
Oh, you don't have a charter. I'm sorry.
We're not a charter city.
Yeah.
No, we are not a charter city.
Well,
to the best of
my there's got to be someone to set some regulations for how things operate, and you just need to
I thought the state said that in a mayor-manager form of government that the city council hires the city manager and the city treasurer, and the city manager then is supposed to do all of the day-to-day operations, the hiring and firing. The police chief is supposed to hire and fire his crew, and but the city manager can override that.
Let me ask you this.
Go ahead. I'm so sorry.
Has anyone gone to talk to the district attorney over that area?
They've hung up on me, and they say that they cannot help you. They can't help. And the district and the assistant district attorney actually hung up on me, and she is related to. There's all kinds of unlawful things going on. There's a special interest. There's a conflict of interest with her. A familial, if you would, conflict of interest that would want make her not want to not to prosecute.
Cooperate.
But it's actually I have their ordinances in front of me right now. Article X. It's a council manager form of city government. So that's what it is in front of me. So section 10 through 101, the form of government provided by sections 10-101 through 10-121, statutory council manager form of city government. Cities governed under the statutory council manager form shall have all the powers, functions, rights, privileges, franchises, and immunities granted or which may be granted to cities. Such powers shall be exercised as provided by the law. Okay, but it's council manager form of government, which I believe it does reference, it is weak mayor.
Yeah, that's where the power would be then, is with the council.
With the power would be with the city manager once the council hired him or her.
Or her.
In a weak mayor form of government.
Well,
the council and the mayor have they are considered the head of the government for basically ceremonial purposes, and in case of martial law, that they are the actual head of the government. But in day-to-day operations, it is the city manager's job to do that.
Right, the city council only hires the city manager, and the city manager hires the chief, and then the Wetumpka Police Department chief hires and commissions the officers, not the mayor or the council.
And
that is laid out in these ordinances. So given that information. Given that the sheriff won't do anything, and now these people are have put themselves in the positions of wielding guns, and after being extremely intimidating to many and that are opposing him, many that voted for him are now opposing him. Okay, so. People were definitely mistaken. It was the typical, wolf in sheep's clothing thing. And so now, I put it in the manner that, he was a covert actor in malfeasance, allegedly, and now he's become the overt actor in malfeasance because he is exactly – where he wants to be, and he thinks he can get away with it to the point where they can now, they have a drunkard allegedly for the city manager. So there's no confidence in the city manager.
The city manager doesn't even show up to the meetings, and he is never in his office. You have to talk to Autumn Jackson, who is a volunteer paid by James and Rebecca Jackson, according to her own words, and she is the city manager's assistant. But she's not a city employee.
I mean, and she says that publicly. She says publicly that, you know, it's on her page. She is making announcements about the water, the electric, about emergency meetings. She's not an employee, but, you know, basically mom and dad pay me to be his assistant publicly.
One of the places I would go, Kayla, I'd go see the Attorney General, for example. I would also look into a possibility of a grand jury. And whatever you have to do to get it taken care of, that's what I'd do.
Yeah, the AG is not returning calls.
I'd go to his office.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd go to his office.
Okay.
I mean,
even if you won't get an appointment, just show up.
Yeah,
right?
Just show up. Yep. That's kind of like when I had a bad case of sleep apnea. I was told that I had 2 or 3 operations. They said I didn't have sleep apnea, so I searched and found the number one sleep apnea doctor in the United States. Couldn't get an appointment for 4 years. So I went out. I flew out to Santa Ana, Palo Alto, California. Went to his office. When I told the lady I didn't have an appointment, she said, "Well, sir, we're booked for months." And I said, "I know." But I said, "You see that chair over there? Yeah. When we finish talking, I'm going to sit in that chair. When you leave your office tonight, I'll go out behind you. When you come back tomorrow morning, I'll follow you in the office. When you leave tomorrow night, I'll follow you out. You getting the picture? I'll be in that chair until I get to see this doctor." And he saw me over noon and diagnosed my problem. But you've got to be persistent, and you've got to take action.
Yeah. And I did that exactly with a senator in D.C. And, you know, at least I got the judge removed from where he was, you know, but the problems are still continuing. But, you know, one thing at a time, right, Mr. Richardson?
That's right.
One thing at a time.
That's how you eat an elephant, one bite at a time.
Sonia, may I interject?
Is the mayor and a council person in a weak mayor form of government allowed to be police officers, even reserves?
Yeah, I'd have to read your charter and your ordinances.
Okay. I was going to say, we don't have a charter. We have ordinances, though.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
What about this? What about the nepotism, okay? Let's take a look at this. We've got a statute here, 118106. Nepotism, dual office holding. No elected or appointed official or other authority of the municipal government, hello, Wetumpka, shall appoint or elect any person related by affinity or consanguinity within the third degree to any governing body member or to himself, or in the case of a plural authority, to any one of its members to adapt to any office or position of profit in the municipal government. The provisions of this section shall not prohibit an officer or employee already in the service of the municipality from continuing in such service or from promotion therein. A person may hold more than one office or position in a municipal government as a governing body may ordain. A member of the governing body shall not receive compensation for service in any municipal office or position other than his elected office. Now, I'm going to just go run off that caveat real quick. So I think he thinks he's trying to cover himself, Mayor Jackson, because he accentuated in a meeting saying that that Autumn is not paid. But guess what? Maybe he scolded that little girl. Okay, and said, why did you post that we're paying you? Because, you know, now it's he said, she said. So she is being paid and is privy to private people's records. He said that he gave her, he loaned her the key to the city office. Now, people might say, but she is not legally a family member. That does not matter. Because if you look up the legal definition of nepotism, she fits right into it, even though she is not legally adopted by them. If you look up the legal definition of nepotism. So I think he feels that he's trying to cover himself by coming out and saying these things and actually trying to act calm in a calm manner when, and this is only after spending the majority of his months in the mayor position, taking a Hitler-like position, and this is not a singular opinion by any means. This is a very widespread
opinion. Right, and he's walking
opinion.
A gray line by not accepting compensation for being reserve police officers. So, Tanya, Mr. Richardson, I appreciate you having me on, but I've got to go. I'll let you guys finish discussing this and take other callers and move on to Calvin.
Well, keep searching, Kayla. There is an answer.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Thank you so much
for your
coming on and being so succinct. Really appreciate it. So, Mr. Richardson, I have a question for you that has been a thought of mine during this process, given that nobody locally is willing to stand up for the citizens of Oklahoma, of Wetumpka. And my thought process has been, go through the mechanics of composing a complaint and bringing it forward to the district attorney's office and let them go ahead and do what, happens in public corruption arenas and just deny it, if that's the case, right? And let them deny it, and then you get to bring that. Go through the process, create those paper trails that need to be created. And of course, we know they're listening now, that we have such a wide audience that the bandwidth is maxed out here. So, assuming that they will do as they said that they have referred everybody else to do, is go to the Attorney General's office instead of open up an investigation. Let's get that in writing. Have them deny it in writing, have them say, no, we're not going to open up an investigation or we investigated and there's nothing crazy going on when there actually is. Okay. And that, people bring forward a complaint with, bundled affidavits of concern of specific infractions of the duties of the offices that are taking place, of the negligence that's taking place, of all of these things. They're bundled together with affidavits by individuals that are concerned about it and have witnessed things, so that it's not just, oh, we don't like our mayor. No, this is what I've witnessed and this is what's wrong, and cite the codes, cite the rules that are being broken, and bring it forward. Everybody who is aware of it, has witnessed it, and has documents pertaining to it, bring it forward and in a complaint and append those affidavits to them. And when they're assumed to be, denied, then you go to the Attorney General's office. I don't know. Should they bypass that first step? You tell me what you think.
I think it sounds like a good plan myself. Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't argue with that.
You need the paper trails, don't you? And you need the facts behind you. You need the facts behind you. You need the details. You need people to come forward.
Sounds like they have facts. They just need to document them, and go up
yep.
the line.
And go right up the line. And go right up the line.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. So I want to see if we have somebody else on the line, Marty, if they're ready to speak. And I certainly want to get James Treat on here with you, Gary. And, we could just talk and get some opinions. James Treat's going to share some things. But first, Marty, do you have somebody else on the line ready with us? I'm not sure if Marty's there right now. She might have stepped away. Okay. Well, She might have stepped away from her platform there. So, James, are you there?
Yes, I am.
I don't mean to make you last because you certainly aren't least. But, James, do you have – thanks for coming on. Thanks for being patient and listening. I believe that I've shared with you, Mr. Richardson, some of the information on James Tree and what he has been through and, you know, his genuine heroism in Alvin, but still is being retaliated against, and the linkage that he has come across to many counties throughout Oklahoma and Hughes, including, of course, Wetumpka. So, James, thanks so much for coming on, and what do you have to say about this?
Okay. Nice meeting you, Mr. Richardson. Just so you know my base, I am a spirit-filled Christian, and I realized very early on, 6 years ago, that this was a spiritual battle.
It is, yeah.
Nothing more, nothing less. And in doing that, that's given me the strength to do what I've been able to do and what I've been able to, you know, to keep persevering and so on and so forth. My background is I'm a retired C executive from the corporate world, both in blue chip companies and private companies. I relocated to Oklahoma. Because my dad was spending more and more time here. I actually was born and raised in Hughes County up until the age of 7. Moved away to Texas, came back when my dad was older, and was spending a little bit more time with him. He passed 3 years ago, but I'm still here. There's a lot of different ways we can go here, but I'd like to just throw this out at the audience and to yourself, because it will probably astound you. Because people just don't put it together. I'll start with Wetumpka's city attorney is John Baca. The Calvin town attorney is John Baca. The Calvin municipal judge is Trey Irby. Trey Irby, by public knowledge, is James Jackson's private attorney. Trey Irby is the cousin of Tricia Smith, the district judge. The ADA is Trey Irby's wife, which is the Hovenville city attorney as well.
Wow.
Your experience ought to tell you everything you need to know.
Yep. Power corrupts absolutely. Power corrupts absolutely.
I was one of the good old boys because I'm related to the greatest majority of Calvin. My granddad was actually deputy sheriff in Hughes County in the 40s. I ran across instances that I saw within the community where certain people were being treated very, very differently than I. And just a common example of that, when I moved here and I went to town hall to get my water turned on, I didn't have to put up a deposit. I just, wham, bam, it was turned on. I get a bill. I saw people go in, have to put up astronomical deposits because they were out of town. They were this. They weren't from here. People denied accounts when they were moving from one house to another house. So I stood up to it, and then suddenly I'm the troublemaker for standing up and calling out people on their criminal activity. I announced on a Sunday on Tanya's show that the town had lost $132,000 on their own financials filed with the state 8 years ago. That was the last set of financials filed by the town of Calvin.
Wow.
No accountability, no one. They just didn't turn them in. Not only that, Calvin's not even a real town because they don't even have any evidence of incorporation, and they don't have a charter. and they have vacillated throughout the years of being a city or a town, however which way that's benefited them, and or a municipality. When they needed a federal grant or some federal assistance, they suddenly became a city. And they've committed fraud with the federal government to get what they needed. When they needed to get a check from an oil field company, they suddenly were the town of Calvin Incorporated.
Well, let me interrupt you just a minute. When they abuse federal funds, then the person you go to see is the U.S. attorney in Muskogee.
Well, that's a true statement. I had the FBI attention, and they came to town, and they were looking into the bad actors of Robert Jones and Linda Bennett, among others. I sat in on testimony or interviews concerning those conversations. It stalled because the state of Oklahoma wouldn't conduct the necessary bookkeeping or the audit of the town to get the numbers and the additional information they needed, so the case was closed. Since then, we as a town, or some people helped on behalf of the town, to get an audit by citizens' petition, which is actually taking place right now. There's been certain things that's happened that I believe the FBI is back involved because of hate crimes and different things against myself. But the corruption is beyond your belief and in your face. Let me go back to this attorney that is the city attorney of Wetumpka, John Baca. He is also the city attorney of Calvin, Oklahoma, or the town attorney for Calvin. We're sitting in the town council meeting, and it is a five-member trustee form of government. In other words, they administer the town and everything under the town. We do not have a city manager. We do not have a town manager. But the council is drafting a new ordinance. All right? The town attorney is present. The mayor has a multi-page document that is this new ordinance. It is not distributed or given to anyone else at the table. She reads excerpts from this document to, quote-unquote, enlighten the other council members as to what's in the document. Then starts to strike and scribe the document. They call it for a vote. An incomplete document that's going to become a town law, a town ordinance.
Something that was not put in front of anybody other than...
I objected. The town attorney, the mayor, looks to him. His comment was, mark it as amended. The mayor can go take and write anything she wants down on that document. And it is now the law. It is now the ordinance.
According to the town attorney, it doesn't mean that's legal, though.
No, I understand.
Does it?
Yeah, because I know it's not. I'm just saying that's the lackadaisical attitude and the incompetence and lack of knowledge of that attorney. And I've had dealings with him over the last 5 years, and I could go on and on and on. But that's who is directing traffic over in Wetumpka. He's not there for the benefit of the people. He's there for James Jackson to accomplish whatever his personal agenda is. Because his attitude is, sue me, fix it. You do something about it. He has, upon occasion, said the town won't listen to him, so he doesn't tell them anything. Well, but he has taken an about face to defend them at every turn now along that line. Let me go on into something else with the town of Calvin. As a legal entity, Gary Richardson is your legal entity. Is that correct?
Right.
My legal entity name is James Treat. Trey Irby, the town municipal judge, doesn't seem to know or acknowledge what a legal entity is or isn't. I just had to go and appear before municipal court being prosecuted by the city of Calvin. The city of Calvin doesn't exist. That's a fictitious name. It's the town of Calvin at best. That's who I actually sued in district court 4 years ago, was town of Calvin. But now I have the city of Calvin pressing criminal charges against me for disturbing the peace, when their own ordinance states in the code that it shall be styled town of Calvin versus blank. Trey Irby totally ignores that and carries on with my trial. That's besides the fact that if you're charged with a crime in Oklahoma, the CLEAT certified officer or approved officer has to witness the crime to write a citation and or receive a signed affidavit on a complaint that he finds merit with, signs it, and then you're ordered to appear. On this disturbing the peace, this is on the 4th of July. This is where my trailer was burnt, and according to the ATF, and let me interject here, the Sheriff's Department doesn't investigate fires if they're on the scene. The local fire department leaves the scene to go get more water, so therefore the state fire marshal won't investigate the crime. So I take my evidence to the ATF. They look at it. It's still there, but I did get an opinion back from them that it was a purposeful explosion. It wasn't random fireworks. But yet my citation was for disturbing the peace, and under our local code, it's not illegal to shoot fireworks on the 4th of July if I had have even been one shooting them. But there is no attestation statement on the verified complaint of the person who was complaining about me. There was no police officer signature on the citation. It's charged by a fictitious being, which totally eroded any due process or any of my civil rights. Better yet, when we go to court, town code says that there shall be a prosecuting attorney. This is pointed out to Judge Irby. He ignores it. Proceed with trial. I'll skip to the long and the short of it, but I had sent out, and they're posted online, a motion to quash on the four elements of law, I believe, on the first appearance. And then another motion to quash based on town code in the pretrial. Both were denied. Dozens, at least a half a dozen state statutes and or town codes were ignored. Because I can go back, when I turned on the town and said, that's not right, this isn't right, they first tried to take away my access to my property.
Okay, and we're going to have to condense this a little bit if you don't mind telling the outcome. And I'm not trying to be rude by any means, but we've got people coming in. I've got all kinds of questions and information being brought into me as well, just to put out there. And I know that you won. You just beat them. So,
well, he had no choice in this last attempt to harass me with the legal system, but they have tried to run me out of town monetarily. When my truck was burnt or arsoned in the street a year and a half ago, I received 30 citations for littering in the street.
And that littering was the leftover debris from somebody burning your truck.
From my truck. And the thug police chief at that time committed perjury on every one of the citations he wrote, because he certainly didn't see me burn my own truck. He wasn't even at the scene when the truck burned. He was actually prohibited by the sheriff's office from being in town that day. That's a whole other story in and of itself. But the whole point of my conversation here is these small towns and this small group of people that sit on this council and has got, you know, we've got 260 some odd people that vote here. You've got 25 people maybe at best that's controlling the town because your voters won't turn out. Our average mean age here is probably 65 or up. And they won't get involved because they're afraid the town people running the town, i.e. Robert Jones, i.e. now his son, since Robert Jones passed, will turn off their water, which they did turn off my water. It's hard to fight a fire when you don't have any water. And
okay,
going back to the lady that
I don't mean to interrupt, but we have callers backing up on here, and you've got 14 minutes left. We need to get at least
we're going 2 hours tonight, I thought.
No. I'm sorry. Oh, good heavens.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Okay.
My mistake.
Yeah, I thought we were slotted for 2 hours.
Let me just briefly share the lady that said where to go, AG, et cetera. Brett Massey is the AG that's the head of the corruption division within the Oklahoma AG's office. When I met with him a month or so, yeah, it was about 5 weeks ago, I met with him on several different items, but he was aware of Wetumpka's carousel of police chiefs. But it's my best guess that he is the gentleman that you need to contact.
Thank you. Thank you. Stay on with us, James, and Mr. Richardson, please, if you would. Okay, Marty, who are we bringing on? Do we know?
Yes, area code 352, you're live and on the air.
Hey, Tanya.
Hi, and who is this now?
You know who this is.
Is this Carl?
No, it's Rich.
Oh, it's Rich. Oh, Rich. Hi. Hi. How are you? I'm glad you called
good,
in.
Good.
Thank you so much. Have at it.
Short and sweet, pretty well everything that I was going to talk about it after I hit the one. Has come out. Just one thing, the police chief that we have at this point is he was second in line not too long ago, and he quit. So I haven't had a chance to speak with him directly, but he actually quit, and I have a rumor why he quit, but I just thought I'd throw
that
in there.
When did he quit?
A couple months ago, I believe. I'm not positive on that. Don't quote me. It's been
okay.
One of the chief that he was under at the time quit, and then he quit shortly after that, the next day, I believe it was. And like I said, you know me, I don't have all the details, so I'm not going to sit here and talk about it directly, but that's kind of concerning to me also.
Yep.
Okay.
And the one thing
now,
do you think that it's concerning others?
The people that I've spoken to, yes, there's some concerns about that, wondering why somebody would quit and then turn around and come back and work for the same city you just quit recently to be the chief.
Hmm. Okay. Thank you for that information.
Okay. All right. You have a second caller on here. Yeah, area code 539. You're live and on the air.
Okay.
Okay. My question is kind of going back to the request of the open documents. How are we supposed to know truthfully the documents that he has are correct? Because there's been people in Wetumpka that has caught him on video loading up documents by the crates and by the bags in his personal vehicles.
That's a good question. There are many people who have, or several people who have seen them there late at night and files coming in and out. And in my opinion, that would indicate that he's preparing for some kind of an audit or an open records request. And Autumn Jackson, who is not even an employee of the city, is there at all kinds of crazy hours with open access to these things as well.
Where he's living at is on Main Street. And that's not even regulated for housing. It's our old Hughes County Times paper building. And how was he able to live there?
There's state law to protect that. I do the same thing.
Okay. I mean, I know he's a liar. And just like, I mean, people's posted the videos of him getting the documents. And, I mean, the whole back of, I think he drives an expedition, the whole back of the expedition is completely full. And even one night they brought a trailer and had documents on trailers.
What are they doing with that stuff?
Exactly. And so my thing is even if we do get to see some of the documents, it's not going to be all of the documents that we need to see.
Well, yeah, and as well, they only just last council meeting, if I saw this correctly, put in a motion that the city clerk can also be the treasurer. Now, prior to that, I had called and I spoke with her, and she told me that she was the clerk, and I asked to be put over to the treasurer. She said, "I'm the treasurer too." Well, there was no ordinance allowing.
The whole reason he has one person doing multiple jobs is because there's been people who used to work there for James Jackson, and they don't do exactly what he says. In his words, they don't mind him, and so he fires them, but he also reminds them on a daily basis. If they don't remind him, he has an arsenal to blow up all of Wetumpka. So people are scared of him because he's one of those, he's crazy enough to believe that he has this arsenal. But then again, he's crazy enough not to believe.
Yep. I mean, this is the consensus of a great many Wetumpkans. It's not just a small group. I mean, I'm seeing messages on here right now, but I'm afraid to come forward. The retaliation. I understand what you say, Mr. Richardson. You know, I'm still not going to fault somebody for being afraid, because there comes a time they can actually be investigated and remain. He can be investigated and remain anonymous if it's on a state level. Is that correct? If somebody submits something, Mr. Richardson.
Yeah, you can be anonymous. Sure.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It doesn't carry the weight that it carries if you give your name, but you know, you can still be. I'm not faulting people that are fearful. I'm just saying fear is never your friend.
Right. Right. Oh, I know. I understand that. Yeah.
They might. A person may say, "Well, my knowledge is that if I do this, this is going to happen to me, and my wisdom tells me not to do it." That's not fear. That's knowledge and wisdom.
Right. Right. All right.
Real quick, back to the executive session. I have reviewed their executive session. It's just like Calvin and John Baca is still the same attorney in both places. They are abusing the use of executive session, both in the statutes that they are in the statutes that they quote and in the subject matter of the council meeting executive session.
There's all kinds of infractions. Where do you begin? Whack-a-mole. We begin by putting down and witnessing, putting down in writing, swearing to it that you're witness to this and write the violations that assert what exactly you've been witness to. And that is what anybody out there needs to be willing to do. And it can be brought forward if you're fearful for your life, health, and well-being to the state to ask to remain anonymous, because the information can still be investigated. Now, I've got Carl on the line, and I asked Carl Jamison to come on, and we have very, very little time, but Carl has just put his hat in to run for Senate, right, Carl?
For the state Senate, district.
For the state Senate, and unfortunately, Carl's family and friends are victim to his brother being murdered and alleged public corruption in that matter with the proper prosecutions. But, Carl, thanks for coming on. Unfortunately, we have half an hour less time than I thought we did. So just please, can you chime in here?
Well, like I said, you know, I've just become aware of the Wetumpka situation. I heard Mr. Treat, he came to our victims meeting in Pittsburgh County, and we heard what he's been fighting for. You know, he inspired us as our victims group to fight harder with his words of encouragement and how he's been fighting. And I do have a question for Mr. Treat.
Yes, sir.
Did the Pittsburgh County DA ever look into your stuff like they were supposed to?
No, sir. And I followed up on that, and that was one of the reasons I was with Brett Massey. Just for the Mr. Richardson's benefit, I went to the DA to try to get him to investigate Trey Irby. He couldn't. Said he couldn't.
Right.
He had a conflict of interest because of his wife. He referred it to the AG's office. The AG's office made a formal assignment to the Pittsburgh County DA, and the gentleman that's on right now, we both have firsthand knowledge that he said that he wasn't going to do anything about it. But I cannot get the AG's office now to give me the documentation on where they gave the formal assignment. And with even the DA, Paul Smith, any written confirmation that he made the assignment to the AG. I'm glad you brought that up.
You're welcome, sir. And I know that on our deal, we have written the Attorney General and talked to Merrill Williamson, who won't return our calls no more or our emails. I have sent a formal letter. I faxed it because they wouldn't give me the email to Mike Hunter, so I had to fax it to his office. And I've sent a formal letter to Department of Justice for violations of the Constitution and Federal Victims Act. And we're just and I've reached out to politicians, you know, throughout the state, not only on our deal, but also on Wetumpka's behalf, and we get nowhere.
Yep. And see, this is just it, folks, and this is what my belief is. And Mr. Richardson, I'd like you to comment on this as well. You know, I think that we really need to go through the proper protocols in order to go to the next level. And in order to go through to the next level, you have to start in the local level. The local level doesn't do it, then you collect that information, you collect that trail, and you bring it forward to the state level. The state level refuses you, you have to bring that that information to a federal level. But listen to this. This is the huge caveat here. Without people coming forward more than as one complainant, you're not going to go anywhere. It would be like a straw in a haystack. It's not going to go anywhere. So anybody out there who wants this to stop, what do I think? I think the Attorney General needs to go because he's negligent, he's reckless, people's lives are in danger, and he does not prosecute his own. That's what I think. You need to bring it to the federal level, but not one person. They become interested when they hear from the masses that the same problem is going on. So then when it goes to the federal level, it's a complaint against the Attorney General, okay? And everybody gets to chime in and say, this is what you did here, turn down, turn here, turn down. Well, who is the highest legal authority in Wetumpka? It is the Attorney General's office. So if he isn't doing his job with those other legal enforcements that are in place and making sure they're doing their job, then who does that rest on? Mr. Richardson, would you please respond to that? We're going to have to close out in just a minute.
Yeah, I would agree with everything you said. I would add one thing to it, and that is I would go to the media.
In the masses.
Can't get their interest.
But you have to do it in the masses. You have to do it in the masses. He said you can't get their interest. You have to do it in the masses.
Yeah, you've got to have one doing it.
Well, we did the prayer vigil in Pittsburgh County for the victims, and we prayed for the community. And, you know, I reached out to all the Tulsa news stations, and only one came down. And they did a brief story, and that was the end of it.
We need many complaints.
You just keep going.
Yes, sir. We're not going to stop.
Like I say, you have a target, you just keep going to the target.
Yes, sir. And that's what we're doing.
Never.
And on the federal level, I just wanted to say we reached out to all the federal senators from Oklahoma and congressmen, and we was told by Langford he didn't want to get involved.
The other ones just
keep sending us their campaign flyers. They won't answer our questions.
I've got to cut you off. I have to rudely cut you off because we're out of time right now. We're actually out of time. I'm so sorry. I have to give the thank yous. Okay. I want to thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts, Mr. Richardson, for coming on with us, for James Treat, for continuing your warriorship. Mr. Richardson, thank you so, so much. And I'm going to share your information again. Hopefully we can have you on it again. And James, thank you so much. Carl, thanks for calling in. The other callers online, I'm sorry we couldn't get you in. Kayla, thank you for calling. Please, everybody, join us this Sunday, this coming Sunday at 7 Central Time. We will continue and we'll talk a little bit more about how we can make this happen. Okay? Thank you once again.
Never give up.
Amen. Thank you so much. God bless everyone and good night. I'm Tanya Hathaway. Good night.